diesel and replaced the tires here a while back with Michelin's, the same size I had had on before, and seem to be getting some launder that goes up against the crown of the road. You know, when you go down the road, if you've got a crown, it's with tendency, you know, I have a tendency to maybe veer a little bit to the right, but it wants to climb up, you know, up on the top of the crown. I had him check it at the front end shop again, and, you know, it was right on. And
okay. I always get worried when I hear
that. I didn't have it with a previous set of tires that are exactly the same.
Yeah. Oh, you opened up a big old can of worms here, buddy. One time I bought a Jaguar for my wife in 2001, and the back tire started wearing the inside edge real bad, so it was under warranty. So I took it in, and I said, you know, can you guys look at this? And they call back, and they go, it's within spec. And I said to them, I don't care if it's within spec. The spec on all of the adjustments on the rear and the front of a car has a window that's as wide as a mile. You need to fix the rear end. Please fix the rear end to make sure that the tire stands up straight instead of having the top in and the bottom out. And they said, we don't know what you're talking about. I said, that's fine. So you're telling me you can't fix it? And they said, yeah. And I said, okay, I will. And then I'll bring you the bill. And they said, whoa, 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 whoa. And I says, what's the matter? I says, I'm going to be happy. You guys, you pay a $100, $200 bill, you're done. So then from then on, it's my responsibility. You don't even have to warranty the rear, or the alignment on the rear anymore. But here's the deal. I need you to drive on the right side of the crown road. Now, where are you, on a city street, or are you on a highway?
Well, mainly going, you know, up north on okay. a freeway.
All right. Usually we crown from the center of the road outward.
Right.
Okay, so I want you in the right lane, and you said it's trying to climb up, and yep. then I want you to go to the left lane, and what does it do there?
If I'm in the left lane?
Yeah. See, I got you already.
I'm not sure if it's probably a little less crown up on top than it is on the right.
Well, the crown, the road on the highway is going to be crowned right at the you know, the divider between the two lanes, because we want water to run off both sides.
Right.
If there's a crown, it'll be down the middle. So if it pulls to the left in the right lane, then it should pull to the left in the left lane. And if I were your alignment guy, then what I'd know is I would know for sure that it's going to pull to the positive number of camber or caster. No, camber. What I'm saying is that I can adjust the camber and the caster to make it pull wherever I want. So if I put the positive, it'll pull to the negative side of caster and the positive side of camber. Well, if I have three quarters on one side and one on the other and it pulls to the positive side, it's going to pull to the right. Why don't I switch those? Why don't I put one on the left and three quarters on the right? That's what a good alignment guy does. This crazy note, oh, it's within spec. That's not answering the question. The question is why am I doing that now?
1 minute.
One other thing you might want to do, Harry, is adjust the inflation on the tires. So go up and down, go down 10, 15 pounds, see how it is, and then go up 10, 15 pounds and see how it is. Don't exceed the maximum written on the LT on those Michelins. And see if it's a tire pressure problem, because sometimes we fill them too much, and people complain about that. And once we drop the air pressure, sometimes 5 pounds, sometimes 8 pounds, then the tire is fine. But we've got too much of a crown on the tire. We've got a, you know, the tire's no longer flat. It's got a big point on the tread port because we've got too much air in it. And sometimes that'll cause it. But I can't align your car to make it run flat down the road on a city street and a highway street, because one of them's flat and one of them's crowned, and I can't do that. So you got to pick which one you want, and any good alignment guy can pull that off for you. It's 10:39. When we come back, we're going to take your call, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And I'll give you the number one more time. 602. No, I'll give you more than one. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, you can get in and we'll take care of your problem as best we can. And, Harry, give it to me again.
Yeah, I was wondering if rotating the tires and maybe a crisscross pattern, you know, putting the ones on the right to the left would let me know if it's a tire problem or a...
Well, there's a difference now. There's a difference in my world that a pull the answer to your question is yes. That's the very first thing you do. I have a pull all the time. Crown road, flat road, left road, right road, I don't care at any speed. I've got a pull or a drift to the left all the time. Then absolutely, the first thing you do is cross the fronts. Now, Harry, what's going to happen when you cross the fronts? There's three possibilities. What are they?
One is going to stop the problem.
Bingo.
The next one, it could increase it or make it drift the other way. And
yep.
Makes no change, the third.
Yeah, exactly right. So we win, because if we crisscross the fronts, that'll tell us everything we need to know. If the pull moves the tire's problem, now we got to figure out which front tire it is. Because the left can pull it to right, and the right can pull it to the left. Or there is no change, which means it's an alignment problem. Now, by that time, we'd bring the rears up to the front. And if it pulled to the left after we've had all four tires on the front, then we're going to align it. Or maybe even sooner.
Caller Dan.
And so the answer to your question, but you said drift. And there's a big difference.
Yeah, you just take your hands off the wheel, and it just wants to slowly kind of creep up.
Okay. And see, let me ask you a question. You're an alignment guy. If the driver falls asleep, where do you want the car to go?
I don't want it to go to the right, not the left.
That's it, buddy. You got it. That's exactly what a good alignment guy does. Is on a crowned road, on a highway, first of all, most of the time highways are somewhat flat. So we're going to make it drift a little bit to the right in case you fall asleep, or unless you'd let go of the steering wheel or something happens. We want you to go right, not left. Another thing is on a crowned road, it's going to aggravate that slight pull to the right, because now on a crowned road, we've got two things pulling us to the right. Now, if you're only in the city, then I'm going to make you drift a little left because you don't drive on the highway, and I want you to hug that crowned road. So I'm going to make you go straight down the road on a crowned road by making it drift to the left. Here's the deal. I look at the alignment specifications, and it says, Mark, the setting on this front end on both sides is between 1 and 2. I have 100 marks between 1 and 2. Right. Now, I'm only allowed to go side to side 150. I'm only allowed to go 50. But I can still set the left at 25 and the right at 75. And is it in spec? Left is a 25, 125. And the right is a 175. Is it in spec? Yes.
I assume it is.
Yeah.
Opening area.
Because it's between 1 and 2. Between $1 and $2. So I can do 125 on the left, and I can do 175 on the right, or I can flip-flop them. But as long as I stay within a half a degree or 50 cents between the middle of them, I'm okay. So if I'm dealing with camber, it pulls to the positive number. So if 175 is on the right, it's going to drift to the right. If 175 is on the left, it's going to drift to the left. I'm going to line around what you want. There's really some good guys out there that do alignments. It's just a matter of calling a couple shops and asking them, I don't want to hear that it's in spec. I want you to fix it. And do you understand what causes pulls left and right? That kind of stuff. All right?
Okay, that sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Good luck to you. Thank you very much, Harry. And who was the next one?
It was Dan.
Dan, good morning to you, buddy. What can we do for you?
Hey, I've got an older car. I got a 1992 Olds 88.
Okay.
3.8 motor. I've had it about 10 years, primarily city driving to work and what have you.
Okay.
several months ago, it started having a knack-knack problem, which people tell me it sounds like a lifter isn't working right or something. And I just wonder if there's any additive or anything I can do for that. And this might give you a clue. When I have it sitting outside at night, gets cold during the night or cools off, the next morning I can start it and I can drive about 4 or 5 blocks. I don't hear a thing till it kind of warms up, and then it goes knack, 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 knack.
Okay.
Drives good, uses no oil, and got the guys told me it's got good oil pressure. Somebody mechanic checked it. And so, you know, we drive it every day like there's nothing wrong, but it's monotonous, that like knack, knack, knack.
Okay, all right. Well, first of all, it's a bad idea to fix your car by popular vote. because that happens on the internet all the time, and I see that every day of my life. I had a guy come into the shop the other day, Dan, who had spent $2,000 chasing a problem based on what people on the internet thought it might be. Now, let's not say thought. They guessed, because they're no better at fixing cars than I am over the phone. They're no better.
Right.
In your case, let me ask you a question. If we had an exhaust leak, would the exhaust leak, could it sound like a lifter, a tick, 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 tick noise?
No. This is. I've heard exhaust leaks in years gone by, but no. This is more than a chick, chick, chick. It's a click, 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 click.
Okay. All right. Well, I can tell you that there's 150 years of experience at my shop, and there ain't a one of us that can tell the difference between a lifter and an exhaust leak. I can't. I have to do something to eliminate an exhaust leak. Nissans. We wouldn't even be in business if it wasn't fixing Nissan exhaust leaks, and every one of them comes in because it's got a lifter noise. So we have to find out what it is. We're going to use a stethoscope, or we're just going to turn the engine off and pump a bunch of smoke up the tailpipe, and if it starts wisping out between the manifold and the head, there's the leak. And they sound just like lifters. So if you have a lifter leak, we have to identify if it's on the front side of that V6 motor or on the back side of that V6 motor. Once we identified which side it is, then we're going to take the valve cover off of it. And we're going to check to see what kind of an adjustment we have. And then we're going to see if we can tighten it up. Now, maybe it pulled the stud out of the head. So the more we tighten it up, it's just going to get loose again because the stud's coming out of the head. Well, we put a straight edge across all the valves. Woo, look at this one. It's sticking up an eighth of an inch higher than the rest of them. That means the stud's being pulled out of the head. Why don't we take that stud out and let's just thread that hole and let's thread the stud, put it back in there, put a little Loctite in it. Now it won't ever come out. How about something like that? So we have to diagnose it. And we have to, it's simple. You can take a piece of heater hose, put it in your ear, start the motor up, get it to click or make whatever noise, and just start touching things with the heater hose. You'd be surprised on what you can hear. You don't want to put it next to your wife's mouth because she'll yell at you and blow your eardrums clean out of your head. So the idea is we got to diagnose it first.
Wow.
But I promise you, you got a 50-50 chance of this being a lifter. How many miles are on the car?
About 150, 160.
Okay. Now, if you had low oil pressure, you could have a lifter, but you'd have more than one. If you have just one bad lifter, the repair is very expensive. We're going to have to pull the intake off of it and pull all the lifters out of it and replace all the lifters on all the push rods.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Okay? Because we're not going to just do one. That's crazy at 150,000 miles. So the answer to your question is, if it's determined that it's a lifter, then I would probably see if I could find somebody who would flush it with a very caustic... in the old days, Dan, they used to call it methyl ethyl ketone. M-E-K. That would really do a good job. You could probably find some of that somewhere around town. They make it in different products. But yeah, there's some engine cleaners you could use. But another thing you could do is what do you know what rate oil you're using? What weight you're using?
Well, when this happened, I had just changed oil. And it was a lot of mechanics use it. It was a 520, and I said, you know, the oil's thin like water. Anyway, we went to a very heavy oil thinking that it might help. So right now we have like 2050.
Okay, and you went and it started with a 520, or I mean that the noise was there at 520?
Yeah.
Okay, then nothing with your oil is going to do anything. Because you're right, 520 has the consistency of water, but let me just train you on that real quick. Put your hands together like you're praying. You with me?
Hey.
Rub them as fast as you can. Push them against one another and rub them. Are they getting hot?
Yeah.
Okay, that's your motor. Now, I'm going to ask you. I want something to go in between your hands, and I want it to carry away the heat, carry away the trash, and provide lubrication. Are you going to pick peanut butter or water?
Yeah, I see.
You see my point? So today, we're going to actually start using zero oils here pretty quick, and that gives you better fuel economy. And don't be afraid of those, because you and I were born in the time where
50 weight was like a pillow. We close our eyes and we see a pillow. The motor loves the pillow. It loves that thick oil. Everything gets done. Today we know it's not the truth. It never was the truth. I'm going to tell you a quick story because I can do that real quick. Valvoline had a street race here 4 or 5 years ago, and they hired me and my staff to pit all of these go-karts. And big companies bought the go-karts, then they raffled it off to a bunch of their employees, and then we were going to drive around Central. Before we went, they gave us a cart, and they said, but you cannot win. You guys can race, but you're going to help all the other teams, but you can't win. So I called the laboratory, and they sent me special oil. So we helped everybody get their cars racing. And during the first race, one of my guys came in second, and I was pretty mad at him. And the second race, we came in second. And in the third race, he's running third. It's the final event. He's running third. The first car and the second car on the lap, on the last lap, they collide, and he's pushed across the line by the guy behind him, and we win. Now, I'm the head tech guy. Now, I'm going to make sure that these motors only go to 3,500 RPM. So I lift the back of the go-kart up. This is how I did it all weekend long. And I have a tachometer, and I put it right at the spark plug, and and somebody pulls the throttle. Everybody, 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, everybody is right at 3,500. Do you know what our go-kart was at? 5,000.
Wow.
So I called up the lab and I said, well, we won, but I disqualified our car because the RPMs were over. And they started laughing. And you know what they said? They said, you remember that oil we sent you? And I said, yeah. And he goes, that was like water. He says, we wanted you to try it in your go-kart. And I says, yeah, but you should have told me that so we didn't end up winning. And I had to disqualify our car. But that's the way it is today. That's the way it is today. There's lots of guys out there that can help you. You're going to spend between $75 and $125 to track that down. But if it were a lifter, I'd probably go back to that 520 or 530, and I'd just drive it until I had to do something. And right now, you don't have to do nothing. If it's a lifter.
I don't want to argue with, I mean, you're a mechanic, I'm not. But this, to me, sounds more like not a hissing sound, but definitely like metal on metal, click, click, click. But maybe it still could be a vacuum. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the clicking, the clicking noise is the common lifter noise and exhaust leak noise. A clicking noise. It's easy to determine the two, but I just don't want you to think that for sure it's a lifter noise, because I'd hate for you to spend a whole lot of money chasing a lifter and then later find out after they took the head off to do the valves, now it's fixed and everybody goes, wow, we got it, when really all they did is change the exhaust gasket when they did the head, and that's what fixed it, and you could have had that done for about 1/10 of what you spent. That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, sure.
Okay?
Well, I appreciate
all right,
that.
Good luck to you, buddy. All righty. And this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto Repair. Kurtz is a great guy. He's up there at I-17 and Bell. Gas, diesel, and domestic and imports. He's on I-17 and Bell, just east on the north side of the road. Been around since 1992. And I'm telling you, he's a good guy. All right, when we come back, we're going to take your call, 602-508-0960. We'd like you to join us if you want to. 602-508-0960, and we'll talk about your car as long as you want to talk, or until we dump you. And we don't do that very often. I also want to tell you, those of you with that are cowboys, I have something special for you. Something I'm not making a dime off of, but it's something that is really special. So if you own horses or cows and you're thinking about some equipment, I got something that's dirt cheap and it's the best I've ever seen in all my life. And so I want to share that with you. It's something I can do for free, and I like doing it. So, 602-508-0960. When we get back, we'll talk about that. We'll be right back.
Do you have
mission, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn? To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. And if you'd like to join us and you have a car question, you're welcome to call us. Now, you ladies, I need you to know that I always side with the ladies, because that certainly is the wisest decision after doing radio for 20, 30-some-odd years.
It's always the best. So if you have an argument with your husband about should we do this or should we do that, then you call in, give me the argument. I'm going to ask you which side you're on. I'm going to pick your side, guaranteed. That's the safest thing for me. Okay, cowboys and cowgirls. You go down and you buy lead ropes, or you buy a halter with one of those cotton ropes, and you just don't like them, and I don't either. Well, there's this old guy out in Queen Creek. His name is Dick, and he's probably one of the best cowboys I've ever seen. He's in the top 10 cowboys, and I'm not. He is. Of all the cowboys I know, he's in the top 10. He could break anybody's horse, no matter how rank it is. And back in 2006, both of us ended up with a head injury. He had a tumor that they had to remove, and I got bucked off a horse and hurt my head. So we have recuperated together, and we're both back riding horses. And we were talking just the other day about we couldn't decide if our memories were failing because of our age or because of our heads. Now, normal's not a word that would describe either one of us, and we agree to that, and we're not hurt when people say that, and we can blame anything and everything we do on our head injuries, but Dick, he makes the best lead ropes in the whole wide world. They're 10 feet long, and the oval one, it's kind of an oval braid to it, that's got six braids of that white nylon mule tape. At one end, there's a loop, and that's the loop you put through your bull snap or whatever kind of attachment you use to grab a hold of the halter ring, and then you feed the tail through it. And he's also stitched up the tails, and if you want, you can go ahead and, you know, put some wire around there, or a plastic tie or whatever, but he's pretty much got the tail good. The tail's nice for grabbing a hold of and getting the horse's attention. And, folks, I've used these to... I carry a 10-footer in my... I carry two 10-footers in my quads. So when we go hunting or when we go up in the mountains, I can pull other people out. I've used these to pull a tractor out of the mud. They're unbelievable. There's guaranteed never to break. Never. Never had one break, no matter how we've used it. Here's the deal. They're both 10 feet. One of them is an oval-shaped, and one of them is round. The oval-shaped one is made out of six braids, and the round one, which is about the size of a quarter or a little smaller, is made out of eight braids, and they're $25. And you know you can't pick up anything better than this. And here's how it got started. Dick was braiding these, and I was selling them. I'm not making a dime on them, folks. He's going to deliver some to the shop, and we're going to sell them. Anybody wants one, come on by Warner and I-10. And Dick ran out of mule tape. And so I mentioned it on the air that if anybody from an electrical supply company or anybody who uses mule tape to pull big electrical wires through plastic pipe or conduit, if they'd save their mule tape, well, unbeknownst to me, APS, which is a a company that uses mule tape by the miles, they have like four or five big yards around town, and they throw all their mule tape into dumpsters. And one guy at APS arranged to have all the dumpsters dumped into a dump truck, and he brought me a load of mule tape that he left. He left in the parking lot. He just dumped it. It was unbelievable. Dick had a smile on his face from ear. And when I say ear to ear, I'm talking one corner of his mouth is underneath the right ear and the other one's underneath the left ear. So we ended up getting it all over to Dick's place in Queen Creek. And Dick has been braiding, and he's selling these like there's no tomorrow. He's a good guy. He deserves this. So if these are awesome, and you can go to my website and go under barn sales, and we actually have pictures of them. But one's kind of an oval shape. We call it the flat one, but it's oval. It's thick. It's about as thick. It's as wide as a quarter and as thick as three, four nickels stacked on top of one another. But that one's made out of six braids. The eight braid one, they're both 10 feet. And the reason why 10 feet is because you always want them. You know, they're never long enough. So 10 feet is what I ask him to build mine and everybody. And actually, I buy a lot of them and I give them away because they're such a nice present. So now that I've given him a 5-minute commercial for free, because I'm allowed to, then if you're interested in, and if you've got quads, you can take two of them and tie them together. And they make the best tow rope you can imagine. And you're not going to break them because they're made out of mule tape. I think each stick of mule tape is like 800 pounds. So if you've got eight braids, you got like 8,000 pounds. I don't know what the numbers are, but I've got a big draft horse. Every once in a while, he'll just buck off the hitching post just to see if he can pull the hitching post over. So I put them all in concrete about 6 foot deep now. And he's the only one that came close, but he still rips the halter up
or he'll rip the bridle up, or he'll rip the saddle off his back, but he's never broken one of these leads. It's my wife's horse. He's mean like her. Alrighty, so we've talked about the lead ropes. Let me tell you also that this is the time of year that's kind of tough on the auto repair industry. First of all, since we've crashed in the economy from 2008, plus or minus a year, because people say, oh, it's 2007, 2008, well, we didn't crash till 2009, I don't care, it's 7, 8, or 9. Since that's happened, it's not a matter of us guys in the car repair industry, of people buying new cars. It's really a matter of people don't have the money. It's not a matter of buying a new car and I lose your business for 3 years as you go through warranty. That's not the issue. It's a matter of money. We've had customers of ours that have been customers of ours for years and years and years tell us no on brake jobs. So we know it's the economy. All of us, I would say all of us, almost all of us, and included, sometimes during the summer you're making hay when the sun is shining, but comes wintertime, the first day of school, sometime in the first of September, school starts and business just falls off a cliff. Because if your car makes it through the brutal summer, it'll coast through fall and winter, trust me. And so we just don't do a lot of work up until April. Because if your car made it through May, June, July, and August, it's going to coast all the way to the next April. So we make hay when the sun is shining. But then in the wintertime, we usually borrow from credit lines, make payroll stuff. But what's going on right now is that guys are coming into the summertime with credit lines that are maxed out. It's that way in a lot of businesses right now. So as a result of that, some of the guys have decided that they're going to start taking liens on your car. And they're going to say, okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and do this $2,000 worth of work, but I'm going to meet me at the title company and or at the, you know, at Motor V, and I'm going to put my name on your title. I suggest to you that's a bad idea. You can make up your own mind, and if that works for you, then that's fine. But I think that's a bad idea. I think that that says that the possibility of a cash poor business could cause a problem in that respect. And even though you let them put the name on your clean title, what happens if they go belly up and they disappear into the night? How are you going to get that lien off there? So I think it's a bad idea. So just a warning, if anybody wants to do that, you might want to think twice. It's just my opinion. It's certainly up to you to do whatever you want. I write a blog for the Arizona Republic, and it's on azcentral.com, but it's called AZC for Arizona Central Voices. It's all one word, AZC, voices.com. /cars, and I post stuff there usually once or twice a week about stuff in the newspaper, about recalls, and about, you know, somebody gets in trouble over a car repair. We just kind of chime in on what we think. Our industry has always been related to used car salesmen, car mechanics, and lawyers. We're in good company. And I remember being at a golf tournament, and I was playing with, I think Wayne Smith was the lawyer, and John Neiman was the car guy, the car salesman, and Mark Salem was the car mechanic, and I was hoping that the Lord wouldn't have one lightning strike take all three of us out and you know, just kill three with one lightning strike. But in reality, there are lots, and what's really made us clean up our industry somewhat is the internet, because you can take my shop, you can take any shop you want, and you put down their name, ABC Automotive, and then you might put quotes around the ABC Automotive, because you don't want every A, every B, every C, so you put quotes around, and then you put reviews, comments, customers. You can find all kinds of stuff. All of that, take it with a grain of salt, because there's a lot of times that, like for instance, I'll talk about my record. I've got a couple of complaints out there, but the Better Business Bureau has already looked at the complaints, and the Better Business Bureau said, hey, Mark, we feel you've made a more than reasonable effort to make this complaint go away, and the customer still wants you hung and strapped and killed. So we're not going to order that, and we're going to close the complaint. Well, they've blackened my eye throughout the internet, and it's just, that's what it is. There's nothing I can do about it, although I respond to those kinds of things, and so does everybody else. You get those customers that are kind of like pit bulls that just kind of hang on forever and ever and ever, and there's nothing you can do about it, and this gives them power. So use that to your advantage. And when you go through there, hopefully they've got a pretty decent record, whoever you decide. But here's the difference between reviews and my list of shops. Here is a really big difference. The other review places, you know, like Angie's List and Dex and Garage Fly, Great Garages, Kudzu, Narbro, Repair Pal, Two Fix It, Yelp, all those places. They say, you know, we have a list of good shops, but here's what they say. You use these sites at your own risk. You're responsible for any damage or loss that may incur if you result in using our services or our member services. We assume no responsibility for the content, the privacy policies, or practices of any third-party websites. That's what they say. Here's what Mark says on his website. If you have a problem with one of my best shops and the BBB agrees with you, and the shop refuses to either repair or refund, I will personally carry out the directives of the BBB up to $5,000. Now, why five? Because that'll cover a transmission and that'll cover lots of engines. I wanted to make sure that you know that I'm not cherry-picking this thing through. I'm not going to say that I'll cover you up to $400 because the average ticket price in a car repair shop is $350 to $400. That's the difference. We decided to go to $5,000. And you know how many times I've had to pay the $5,000? Zero. How long have I been doing this? Since 1988. The difference is I picked the best of the best. I picked the guys that play by the rules. The men and the women that play by the rules. Those people, they don't pay me money to cover that $5,000. Literally, they pay $750 a year to be on the website, and that's really for the web madam. And the idea is that even if I had to pay $5,000, that's 7 years of dues. And if I kick them off, which is I'm going to do, then I'm never going to collect my $5,000 from them. Get it? So I've got a guarantee that nobody else has. And I've been around here all my life. I was born and raised in Arizona, so I'm going to be here for a while. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back.
United States by Mercedes.
He shook his head and said, this ain't good. The timing belt's done shrunk, one size too small.
Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. You're not calling. You don't have any car questions? That's okay.
We got caller Steve.
Talk. Oh, Steve. Steve, you got Steve. All right, hold on just a minute because I've got some business to take care of first. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Tom at Action Auto. Family-owned upper repair shop, 1983 they started. ASE certified technicians, three of them have an L1 rating, which is an advanced level performance, which is kind of like a master's on top of a bachelor's, if you know what I mean. They're TechNec Professional Automotive Service Center. They offer roadside assistance, free towing, shuttle service. They're located west of I-17 on Deer Valley Road. If you live in that area, then stop by Tom's. Now, second of all, if you're a fisherman and you live in that area, and you'd like to just have people work on your car while you yak about fishing, Tom is the guy. His whole lobby is filled with pictures. He is a fishing fool. We were in Wisconsin with him not too long ago, and he was fishing for all. I mean, there was nobody that got up as early as he did. He was up and gone fishing by the time everybody just started waking up, and it was still dark. And they got some big Mackie, I can't remember what the heck, mackerel, just those big fish in Wisconsin and right around the Michigan area, and he was fishing for those. So he's a really great fisherman. So if you're a fisherman and you want to yak with somebody, go to Action Auto, I-17, and Deer Valley on the west side of the I-17. All righty, Steve, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you today?
Hey, good morning, Mark. First off, you can't laugh. You can only snicker, okay?
Okay.
All right. I have a 1997 Ford F-250 short bed, extended cab, two-wheel drive with the 7.3 power stroke.
Okay.
Automatic with a 410 rear end.
Okay.
I tow a 29-foot travel trailer.
Okay.
I'm going from a travel trailer into a fifth wheel.
Okay.
And the approximate difference that I'm going to be towing is about 2,500 to 2,800 pounds.
Okay.
And I know I've done a little bit of research. Of course, out of all my buddies, I'm the first one going into a fifth wheel.
Okay.
So if nobody can really help me. I know I've heard some stories about the fifth wheel hitch in a short bed that I should definitely go a slider hitch.
Okay.
And I know you do a lot of towing and goosenecks and what have you.
Yep, yep, yep.
And I figured it's not really a car problem, but I'm wondering what I might need to do to the F-250. And she's a great machine and will pull a house if it has wheels on it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you.
And I use right now with the 29-foot travel trailer, I use the named hitch. It's a weight distribution and sway control in one equalizer hitch. And happy with that. I'm just wondering with the fifth wheel, and I'm all stock, nothing aftermarket in the back end yet. And I just wondered both suspension-wise with the hitch and under my hood, everything's dead stock, no cold air intake. And, you know, there's a few questions in here.
All right, okay.
Cold air intake, intercooler on the turbo.
No.
And what do I need to do on the back end?
Okay, first thing you have to do without question is you've got to get the gross weight of the trailer, and then you have to open up the owner's manual, and you have to look for GC. That C is important. Gross combined weight rating, GCWR. You can't go past that. Now, how many axles is the 29-footer?
My 29-footer is a tandem with brakes on both axles.
All right. And what kind of axles are they? Is it two 3,500-pound axles for a gross of 7,000 pounds? Do you know?
It's a six-lug wheel, six on five and a half.
That could be 4,000. That could be 4,500. But I'm thinking, do you know how much your 29-foot trailer weighs?
She's in the neighborhood of about 7,000 pounds because it does have a super slide on it.
Okay.
And it's an all-season trailer, so it's a tad heavier than normal.
All right. The trailer you have now, if it's 17,000 pounds, you said?
No, it's 7,000.
7,000. Then you've got two 4,000-pound axles because the axles and the tires have to carry the load of the trailer. So when it's loaded up to the gills, we're going to round you off to 8. That means you got two 4,000-pound axles. So your truck is more than capable of hauling 8,000 pounds, but you just added another 2,800 to it. So now we're at 11. Now, 10% of that gooseneck is going to end up on the truck.
Right.
But we still have four axles, and not any of them can be overloaded. So your gross combined weight is going to be less than 26,000 pounds because you need a commercial driver's license for above that. So make sure that you know what the truck weighs loaded to the gills, all the beer, all the pop, all the girls, all the boys, all the fishings, all the dogs, everything loaded to the gills with fuel. That's gross vehicle weight of the truck plus gross vehicle weight of the trailer loaded to the gills cannot exceed your GCWR in your owner's manual. It's not on your door sticker.
Okay.
Now, you pull across scales, and you're going to weigh the front axle first. Then you're going to bring the truck onto the scale, and you're going to weigh the whole truck. Then you're going to pull forward even more, and you're going to weigh the trailer with the truck. Then you're going to pull the truck off and weigh the trailer. You're going to go three weights, $8 a piece at most big truck stops. So you'll have everything you need. You're probably going to want to put some adjustable airbags on the back end of that Ford to keep it level. And that's not going to be any problem. The gross vehicle weight, if you're going to add, you're at 10 or 11,000 pounds on this gooseneck. So let's just say it's 10% to 20% is going to be on your truck. So 1,000 pounds, maybe 1,500 is going to be on the truck. The short wheelbase is going to cause you a problem because you need to be able to pivot the truck into a 90-degree angle from the trailer and not blow the back window out. And I speak from experience. So you're right. I like the hitch on the slide. However, this is what I don't like. People will slide that all the way back. We want that gooseneck and that fifth wheel right over the axle. We want it on top. They'll scoot that thing back a foot and a half. Now all of a sudden we got the front of the truck up in the air. We're overloaded on the back. We're sitting down on the axle. We're sitting down on the springs. And they don't have a prayer in hell of ever stopping that thing in an emergency. So that's what you got to do. You got to do it right. Yes, one on a track would be the appropriate one. That way you can just move it backwards one notch at a time until you clear a 90-degree backup.
Now, okay. You go past 90 degrees, your wife's going to yell at you, you're going to blow the back window out, you're going to blow the two corners out on one side, you'll blow the corner out on one side, but I promise you one thing, you'll only do it once. Now, you'll need some airbags to get that rear end back up again. You can get airbags with just a Schrader on the back.
1 minute.
And you can air them up how you see fit, or you can get one with a tank and a compressor, and you can actually adjust it from inside the cab or outside the cab. So it's up to you. You can
next
do all of
up,
that.
Tony, and then Lance.
Got it.
And
now,
go ahead.
The figure I'd like to know, too, on my truck, in the owner's manual, when you're going to a towing guide, the numbers then should match up if what you're telling me, because they're giving you a towing capacity.
Yeah, and you know what? Weight. I'm going to interrupt you because I'm going to hold on to you because I'm coming up on a break. But, yes, Duke, the quick answer is we're either going to have a combined weight of both, or I'll show you where to look for the truck gross weight and the trailer gross weight, and that's going to match up to your owner's manual. But your owner's manual is going to have gross vehicle weight, GV, and it's going to have gross axle weight and gross combined weight, and the combined is the one that's going to cost you big money if you void that out. We'll be right back. We're going to continue with the car calls, and we're going to finish up real quick here, and we're going to finish up with Steve. Steve, I'm going to ask you some questions, all right? You ready?
I'm ready. Yes, sir.
On the sticker on the door, it says that the front axle has a maximum load of 3,000 pounds, and the rear axle is 6,000 pounds. What's the gross vehicle weight of the truck?
11,000 pounds.
Nope. Not remembering that. Let me do it again. 3,000?
I'm sorry. 9.
Okay. You're like me, buddy. Math wasn't my best subject. Girls?
Well, when they were doing math, I was that week I was out chasing Lucinda, I think.
I was in Vietnam. No, I'm just kidding you. All right, yeah, you're right. 3 and 6 is 9. It's right. Just math. Now, on your trailer, there's going to be 2 5,000-pound axles, or there could be 2 6,000-pound axles. So all you have to do is add up the maximum inflation of all four tires. Then look at the sticker on the front of the trailer. Here's what you better make sure. If that sticker says 5,000 pounds and you have two axles, how many pounds should each tire carry? 10 divided by 4. 10,000 gross divided by 4 tires is 2,500 a tire.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so if you have tires that are 2,100 maximum load, you can't take that trailer because those tires aren't set up for that. Now, they're going to say, oh, no, Mark's wrong because, and I'm an expert in this field. I testify in court about what we're talking about. The idea is that, oh, Mark doesn't count that you're going to transfer 2,000 to the truck. That's BS. They don't let you do that. Okay, you can't say, I'm going to overload the front end of my truck to 4,000, but I'm going to take the 1,000 off the rear. You can't do that. The axle is front is 3,000. I don't know what yours is. The back is 6. 3 and 6 is 9. That's the gross vehicle weight of that truck because we're going to hold up the gross vehicle weight with those two axles. Same way with your trailer. So you've got axle weight plus axle weight equals gross vehicle weight, GV, and then combined means gross of the truck, gross of the trailer, combined. Now, let me tell you something that's going to happen here in the near future. I drive back and forth to Payson all the time. I see half-ton trucks and 2,500 trucks hauling three-axle toy trailers. Three axles. You're allowed 26,000 pounds in Arizona. The fine can be $1 a pound above that. Now, if Mark's got his 1 ton... and he's got his 8-wheeled trailer behind him, and he's got a backhoe on it, guess how much Mark would weigh? The answer is 33,000 pounds. Mark can only weigh 26. Mark doesn't have a CDL. He doesn't have commercial plates. So Mark's going to get stopped. The difference between 26 and 33 is 7,000 pounds. I can be fined $1 a pound. $7,000. All Highway Patrol has to do is set up a weigh station on Shea Boulevard and pull every three-axle trailer that comes through there will be in violation. Every single one of them. And they're all going to be in trouble. But I see this every day because I see people going across 40, just the last case I had, women's driving, Wind hits her. She loses control. Kills a bunch of people. The truck's 8,000 pounds overweight. The truck and the trailer combined. They had no business, and they had just bought it from somebody who assured them everything would be fine. We know that because husband survived. See what I'm saying?
So 2 minutes.
Be clear about that. Be precise when you do that. Now, let me give you last option. Mark@MarkSalem.com. Mark@MarkSalem, for anybody. You're going to give me at the end of the day, if you want me to help you, and I'm help you for free, is I want gross axle weight of the front of the truck, the back of the truck. I can add them together. Then I want all the information off the sticker on the trailer.
Okay.
And I want the tire. I want to know what axle weight you got, and I want to make sure the tire. Now, let's go from the tires up, okay, real quick. If you have 4 2,000-pound tires, the most that trailer can weigh is 8,000 pounds. And
right.
if the trailer weighs 10,000 pounds, you're getting bent over by the person that's selling you that trailer. And you're going to have a blowout because we're going to overheat the tires, and once that tire comes apart, here's the worst-case scenario. True story. A young 8-year-old boy is sitting at the dinette set in a motorhome.
1 minute.
The tire comes loose, breaks through the floor, the tread portion of the tire grabs him by the leg and yanks him down through the floor underneath the two front rear tires, in front of the rear tires, and kills him. That was just because somebody was playing games trying to save money on tires. So I got to take a break. When I come back, Tony and Lance, you're my next two callers. Anybody else, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And anytime you have these kinds of questions, because this is where I really shine, is boats, motorhomes, fifth wheels, gooseneck. You know what Mark has now? Mark has a semi-truck that pulls his backhoes and stuff with a trailer with a 59,000 gross that says private RV. See, the difference being is I can haul my own stuff without a commercial license. But I can't haul anybody else's stuff, so I better have title to what's on that trailer.
DNB.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. You're listening to KKNT 960 The Patriot every Saturday from 10 to noon. We talk about cars. You're welcome to join us anytime you want. Real quick, let me just cover some business I got to attend to. Dan called in about a clicking noise. He sure was a lifter. If you happen to have the car guy's cell phone number, you can call him and say to him, Mark, it could be a PCV valve or it could be an injector. So, Dan, if you're still listening to the show, the clicking noise that you talked about that you thought might be a lifter could be an exhaust leak, but it could be a PCV valve, which is about a $7 repair, or it could be a bad injector or a loud injector. Now, sometimes if there's no other problem other than a loud injector, we leave it alone. If you're not running rich or not running lean, we leave it alone. Okay, and what else was there that I needed to talk about? When it comes down to trailers and tires and all that kind of stuff, let me just tell you a quick story how adamant I am about safety on hauling stuff. There's a major tire manufacturer that put a tire on the road for RVs. After many lawsuits and many deaths, it became well known that this tire had been tested as a local delivery tire and had a maximum speed of 65 miles an hour. And just about every old codger that was driving a 40-foot motorhome that was doing 70 and 75 on the freeway legally, many of them had a problem, and there was many of them that died. Now, that's not public knowledge, but when you come to my shop, and many of the other shops out there, we're going to sell you Bridgestone or Toyo or Michelin. You just want to avoid anybody who's pulled a tire off the market here recently and replaced it with a new one. Okay? All righty, Tony, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Hey, thank you, Mark. We're definitely going to try and get the word out there for, that mule tape lead rope.
Okay.
For your partner.
Thank you.
You've already, talked about, trailers. That's what I was calling about, is okay. Trailers. Suspension, the tires, things like that, but when we get into the different trailers, the ability to stop the trailers, okay, today, let's talk about the brakes.
Okay.
Now, when you're upgrading your trailer, you don't have a commercial license like I do, like a Class A with hazardous and double, triples. But when, you're using the air brake, stuff like that, it's a different type of trailer. And when you get all the way down to the smaller double-axle trailers, they have the electric brakes. What kind of upgrades can we do, you know, to make that system work better, you know, not only from a maintenance standpoint, but, you know, for a stopping standpoint, like, you know, the trailer, you know, brake that's, you know, a certain type, a certain system, you know, things like that. What can we do to make it better?
Not to the trailer, nothing. Here's what we find, though. You bring up a good point. We find trailer brakes on just about every trailer that comes in for a service. They're not even working. I tell people the very first thing I do when I get in a truck and I'm hauling a horse trailer is I reach down and I'm going about 10 miles an hour and I hammer that electronic control and I better see those tires skid. Nobody ever does that. But and you're right, I pull trailers both with air brakes and with electric brakes and with surge brakes. But Tony, you're exactly right. There is no such thing as an upgrade. But I can tell you what. Do you know how electric brakes work where the magnet rubs on the drum?
Well, I mean, you know, let me get to this point, okay, though, Mark. I mean, when we're running empty, okay, when an empty trailer, is that the best time to find out when those trailers skid or not?
No. When my wife and my daughter went to pick up my sister in Florida and they were taking my one ton and hauling a big gooseneck back, I said to my wife, when you get that gooseneck loaded up, I want you to keep cranking on the knob until when you hit the brakes and count to two, because there's always going to be a little bit of a delay. One, two. I want that trailer to straighten you up, and then I want you to back off the knob just a smidge. So it's always better. Now, if you're just running empty and you still want it, that test is still okay. It's just we want the trailer to straighten the truck up. And then once we get there, we back off just a little bit. But we got to get there first. And a lot of people, they put the knob on those electric brake adjustments. They put the knob wherever they want, and they just leave it there forever and ever. And I investigate trucks. The truck goes into another car, and there's four-wheel of skid on the truck, and the trailer hasn't left a mark. So he's got 8,000 pounds pushing him through that intersection. But you're right. When it comes to trailer brakes, there's no upgrades. But maintenance is important because the magnet on electric brakes, it won't work well on a piece of rusty metal that's got a bunch of brake dust and rust on it. It won't work well. That's why maintenance is so important. Surge brakes is different. You just have to make sure the master cylinder has fluid in it. But as far as upgrading the trailer brakes on a recreational vehicle with electric brakes, there's no options out there. You could buy a complete new axle from Auto Safety House and go from an 8-inch drum assembly with electric brakes to 12-inch drum assembly, but you're probably going to spend $4,000 doing that. Are you a commercial driver?
Class A.
Okay.
Hazardous, double, triple, you know.
Okay.
Yes.
I envy you
haul,
guys.
I used to haul loads up there to Baghdad Copper Mine on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Anyways, you know, on the smaller stuff, that's what I'm more worried about right now as far as maintenance and stuff like that, because I have friends really asking about this. You know, what should they really be doing, like, when they're using it, you know, like, you know, most of the days of the week, you know, as far as the electric brakes go, you know, when should they start really thinking about, you know, I should change these pads, you know, these brakes on a regular basis? What's the best time, you know, to change them over?
Really and truly, whether they're drums or discs on the back and they're electric, there's going to be noise related when you get back, when you remove the friction material from it. All you have to do is when I'm loading horses, I'll say to the wife, pull forward about 10 feet and hit the brakes, and I stand on one side of the trailer and I listen, and then I move to the other side. So it's a matter of just listening. And if it's metal to metal, that grinding noise, you'll hear it, you'll know what it is, and there's not a man or a woman in the world that doesn't know something's wrong with the brakes if you happen to be standing next to the two axles on the trailer. So it's a matter of listening and being aware. And every morning, my wife came back from Florida. She said to me, I made your adjustment each time. And I said, did you keep track of where you were at? And she says, no, I didn't care. She says, I just made sure that when I cranked it up, I could get the skid, and then I backed it off until I didn't. She says, and I was happy with that. So you're right, but I'm envious of you guys that have those big Class A and those big double triples, and because here's the reason. I'm driving down the road with my brand new two-axle Volvo with a 53 gross. Talking to my wife, all of a sudden traffic stops in front of me, and I am in big trouble.
I go off the road to the right, out across the desert, finally get the thing stopped, and I look back and I know that I would have just smashed 10 cars had I not gone into the desert. And my wife looked at me and she says, "Okay, Mr. Car Guy, what was that all about?" And I learned from there that I have to drive that big rig just completely different than I do anything else I own, because it won't stop on a dime. And I know why now you guys with big trucks get so mad when people cut in front of you and take your space away when we're all traveling down the freeway at 60 miles an hour. So I'm learning. You're educating us one at a time. Tony, thank you very much. Lance, you're up next. How are you today?
Hey, Mark. Glad you got a two-hour show now.
Thank you.
You know, you were talking about trailers, and, you know, you all was real strict on renting out trailers. I remember they used to have a clamp-on hitch that, you know, years ago that they would put on cars with no hitch on them.
Yeah.
And the problem was, is in my case, they were putting on a bumper that was like pop metal. So we rented a trailer going up to 210 Pasadena, and I used to look on the side and see that little 4-inch lip on the grade, you know, on the side, and I'm thinking, why they put that there? I found out why that's there, because I hit my brakes, I did a wobble, the whole car and the trailer did a 360, and when I stopped, the trailer was in front of the car.
And that was the least of your problems, because at that point, the seat's all wet, and there's a certain odor in the car, right?
Cars, I usually had vines. But you know what? You were talking about a semi, and the guy that was behind us was actually going from lane to lane to keep people away from it.
Oh, and I've had that happen when I had a blowout in the left front of my motorhome outside of Barstow, California. There was a couple of trucks behind me, and they both pulled up next to me, and they gave me a chance to recover, and they gave me a chance to pull off to the side of the road, and I'm forever indebted. But thank you very much, Lance. I appreciate your call. David, we're going to get to you next, buddy. How are you today? David?
Hi, how you doing, Mark?
Good.
Yes, I got a 2004 Cavalier with a 5-speed manual in there.
Okay.
And I had to have the clutch overhauled, so I took it to one of your recommended shops.
Okay.
And when I got it back, my wife advised me that the backup lights weren't working.
Okay.
So I took it back to the shop, and they checked all the wiring, and there's power, and they cleaned it and everything, and they worked again. And just recently, my wife advised again that the backup lights ain't working.
Okay.
So I kind of got in there, and I'm somewhat mechanically inclined, so I found out where the switch was. So I started messing with the female-male connection, and they started working again.
Okay.
So I was going to buy a backup switch. So I'm thinking that it's not the switch, but is it somewhere with the two wires and the connection possibly?
If you've got some male-female connectors, you know, the slip-in, slip-out.
4 minutes left.
Then you need to get rid of those. Somebody put those on there somewhere along the line. We used to do that all the time. And it allows you to remove parts, and then you don't have to. But I would take those out, and I would get some solderless crimps, and then I'd put some heat shrink around them. Or silver solder them, and then put heat shrink over the top of them. But we have to make that connection good before we know if the switch is bad. And then if I were you, what I'd do is I'd go back to the reverse light. And you know those U-Haul bulbs that they have? They've got this double filament bulb, and they've got 10 feet of lead. We plug those into the reverse light. We'd run them through the back seat up to your wife, and we'd paint the light bulb black with the exception of one little area where she could see the light was on. And every time she went into reverse, she could see if the lights were working, because we're actually bringing one up front to show her. Now, here's what's nifty. She says, you know what? It's a matter of how firmly I ratchet that shifter over before I push it up or push it down for reverse.
3 minutes.
If I do it easy, then the reverse lights don't come on. So that's an adjustment, probably related to the switch. But until you get those connections situated, you're not going to be able to come to the conclusion. But how much can that switch be anyway? It can't be that much money. So if you wanted to, it's probably going to come with new pigtails, which will give you a chance to fix those connections. And at least if you did that, then yes, that might be the way to go. I got to run real quick, but I want to talk to you about Phoenix Body Works, which was voted one of the best body shops in Phoenix, and they've been on my best car repair shops list for years. Greg May and his staff have been servicing the Phoenix area since 1982, They have free computerized estimates, a written lifetime guarantee on parts and labor. As the insurance company professionals, Phoenix Body Works takes the hassle out of dealing with your insurance company. Their employees are ICAR certified, which is paint and body, ASE certified, which is mechanical, and they belong to the Better Business Bureau. You can't get better than that. You have to remember, too, it's your vehicle, and you choose the body shop you want to go to, not the insurance company. So if you need a great body shop, one of the best in town, call Phoenix Body Works at 623-582-1434. They're located 19th Avenue, half block north of Deer Valley Road. A great place to go. Folks, thank you for spending your Saturday morning with me. As you can tell, I get kind of excited sometimes, and sometimes I get a little bit focused and too hard, and so I apologize, but there are certain buttons about my industry that just wad my underwear up, and trailers and trucks and those young families that are going up and down the mountain, and I know doggone well that they're overloaded to the gill. I pray for them, and I want you to as well, but sooner or later the authorities will recognize that's a big problem, and when they do, they'll set up a way station, and when that happens, they're going to red tag all those vehicles and those trailers, and those people are going to have to call tow trucks to get them back home. If you're one of those people, you better get familiar with gross axle weight, gross vehicle weight, and gross combined weight, and you better know what you're talking about, because you'll skate right through those inspection stations because you'll have everything in front of you. If you've got a three-axle trailer and you're hauling it with a three-quarter ton pickup, you're in big trouble. I can just tell you that right off the bat. I haven't found an example that would say otherwise. A three-quarter ton truck, I don't care, two-wheel drive or four-wheel drive, I don't care if it's got a monster motor, I don't care if it's got a jet engine. You're in big trouble if you've got a three-axle trailer, because that three-axle trailer is going to be well over your limit. I'll see you next Saturday. I appreciate you spending your time with me, and drive safely. Don't drink and drive. God bless you, and I'll see you next Saturday.